Retirement benefits in the military have one thing in common with Social Security and Medicare. They're budget time bombs, and yet no one in Congress has the nerve to touch them. Still, numerous proposals for reforming military compensation have been put forth. One of the most comprehensive comes from the RAND Corporation. Beth Ash is a senior economist at RAND, and she joins me now with more on how to make military pay less costly and more equitable. Ms. Ash, great to have you on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So we're talking about retirement benefits primarily in the study that you did?
Yeah, but we are looking at retirement benefits, but it's part of an overall system, and so we have to look at it within the context of the overall compensation system.
All right, so tell us what the research consisted of, what kind of data you looked at, and who was involved in putting together this report.
So what we did at RAND was provide research support to an internal working group in the Pentagon that was taking a holistic look at the military compensation system and focusing specifically on the retirement system. We built a model which was grounded in thousands of observations on military personnel and their careers, and then we used the model to simulate how cost and retention in the active and reserve components would change under alternative retirement systems that might be proposed.
And it looks like as a result of using that model, this group came up with a couple of possible concepts or design concepts for the retirement system. And I guess, as you say, the retirement system can't be separated from the inputs during the working life that contribute to it. So describe the two models or the two possibilities that might be coming out of this.
So the two concepts are actually pretty similar. They differ in the details. They involve the continuation of what's known as a defined benefit plan, which is what the military has now, although somewhat less generous. But offsetting that would be the introduction of an earlier vested defined contribution, like the Thrift Savings Plan, as well as some increases in current compensation in the form of retention bonuses and also some transition benefits.
So either way, then, you have defined benefits in terms of defined contribution and defined benefits.
Right, that's right. So it's people sometimes call it a blended system, a hybrid system of not one defined contribution or defined benefit, but a combination. In fact, FERS, the Federal Employees Retirement System, is what would be considered a hybrid system.
And so this would be looking like FERS in some manner?
In a very broad way. It's not the details would be very different because military personnel have a very different career than in the civil service, but it's a sort of broad elements would be similar.
Okay, and so I guess we should back up for a moment and talk about what are some of the problems with the current system. It's just that it's not sustainable?
Well, I mean, it's good to sort of say what's good about it, which is that it provides economic security to military members. It also is a force management tool for the services. It induces mid-career people to want to stay in the military and then eventually induces them to leave, so it creates promotion opportunities for more junior people. So it has some good things. It served well for many years. But on the downside, it's inefficient. It's more costly than it could be. In other words, we could get the same type of retention readiness at less cost. It's inequitable in the sense that relatively few, less than 10% of enlisted entrants actually make it to the 20-year vesting point. About a third of officers do, so many don't get a retirement benefit. And it's also an inflexible system. It creates, if you will, a one-size-fits-all career. Despite the huge diversity in the things that we ask military personnel to do in their occupations and communities.
We're speaking with Beth Ash. She's a senior economist at the RAND Corporation. Now, this study goes back several years. It took a while to get it to the point where you had these dual proposals. Are there proposals being written in detail now? Who's writing them, and what comes next here?
Well, what comes next is that it did take a while. The idea was it was a deliberative process on the part of the group. It had many members from across the services and DOD, and they developed a set of concepts. And those concepts are now available to the Military Commission on Military Compensation and Retirement Modernization. And that was a congressionally appointed commission. It began August of 2013, and they are among, they're looking at many elements of compensation, not just retirement, but pay and retirement is certainly on their mandate.
Ultimately, though, whatever they recommend has to be approved by Congress?
That's correct.
All right, so let me ask you this. There's a couple of million people under uniform now, if you add up all of the armed services. And to whom would any new system apply? In other words, would it be retroactive to people now serving, or would it be for people who serve only at some point beginning in the future?
We actually looked at that, and there are different approaches one could take. I believe the legislation that created this commission explicitly addressed that issue, which was to allow currently serving members to opt in to the new system if they felt that that was something they wanted to do. And so we've looked at both, if you will, grandfathering with no opt-in and the ability of members to, you know, current members, they can stay under their current system, all good, or if they see that this new system is better, they can opt in within a specific enrollment window.
Is it possible to say the current system might give more benefits or payout to people that stay longer than the requisite 20? Say they, you know, they go to higher rank and stay 30, 35 years, even in some cases, versus people that want to just do a early part of their career, retire, and then go on to something else?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand your question.
Well, do you do better the longer you stay under the current system? In other words, if people, so therefore, under a new system, you could decide, if you had a choice, I'll go with the new system because I'm not going to be in as long, and therefore I'll come out with more than if I stay a longer time under the old system.
Well, I mean, it's certainly the case that the way the formula is structured, that you you get a higher annuity when you have more years of service or higher basic pay. But the fact of the matter is you can get that retirement if you leave. And many people, even though they could stay longer and get a higher and be qualified for a higher annuity, they also know that if they leave, they can go pursue civilian alternatives and still get some annuity. And so it doesn't necessarily mean that people would want to stay forever, but it is true that the formula builds in something that increases with more years.
And does the formula take into account the possible impact on recruiting and retention?
The proposal or the current system?
Well, the proposal.
The proposals are concepts, if you will. They were designed to sustain the current experience mix and size of the military force in each service. That doesn't mean that that's the ideal, but it was certainly the case that whatever we went to, it would have to be something that at least could give us what we get today. And so we did a lot of analysis on the retention effect of these proposals, and by and large, they sustain the current size and experience mix of the force. And so as a result, there would be no change in retention and consequently no change in recruiting relative to today.
And given what is known about the force size now and in the future and patterns in how long people stay, was the model able to project what the future actuarial cost of this might be if the new system were implemented versus just sticking with the old one for the rest of time?
So we did do analysis of cost savings, working with the Department of Defense Actuary, Office of the Actuary. They actually did the costing of the retirement system, and then we did costing of additional costs related to retention bonuses and continuation pay. And they, of course, can project costs and find that these concepts that we considered would save quite a bit of money, I mean, at least on the order of about $2 to $4 billion a year. That was in 2013 dollars when we did that.
So it's not the only answer to future costs in the military, but it sounds like a good chunk of the issue that they're dealing with.
There's certainly, you know, compensation is multifaceted, but yeah, it's certainly an important piece.
All right. So just to, once again, I'll ask, what's the status of it and what's the timeline for maybe turning it into a proposal for that commission?
Well, the commission is required to put its report out in February of 2015, and so, you know, and certainly they look to the literature, including these proposals that the internal working group came up with in the Pentagon in their deliberations, and so we have to see what they come up with in the winter.
All right. Beth Ashe is a senior economist at the RAND Corporation. Thanks so much for joining me.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.